Okay, everyone. Hello, I am Lisa Lorraine Smith. I think you guys mostly know me. I'm the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And this is going to be an interesting discussion, I think, because I know that when I worked at my agency, we always talked about this, how to recruit volunteers, how do we get more, how do you keep them, et cetera. So let's hear what people have to say. I'm so happy to be joined by Belinda Lasky from West Palm Beach, Alfred JFS. She and Anat Paz, who she just said wasn't here, are the co-chairs. And these two really think hard about what's going to be important. They plan agendas. They really talk about what, thank you. They really talk about how they want the discussions to go. And you're very lucky to have them as your leaders in this. So I'm going to hand it over to her and looking forward to hearing what we have to say. And look who's coming in now. I have a feeling this was the volunteer coordinator at the agency where I used to work, and there she is. And I'm so glad you're joining us, Elise. I hope you can hear me.
Hi.
Did you hear me? Give you the big
Yes.
shout out?
Yeah, hi.
Okay, good.
Was good timing. Well, thank you for the nice introduction, Lisa. Yes, I'm Belinda Lasky. I am the Director of Volunteer Leadership here at Alpert Jewish Family Service, which is based in West Palm Beach, Florida. We cover the majority of Palm Beach County. There's also a South County Jewish Family Service as well. So a lot of Jewish people in Palm Beach County, they're nicely covered by two JFSs. My co-chair, Einat Paz, is visiting family and friends in Israel right now. So she sends her best. She'll be with us on our next call later in the fall. She and I did have a great conversation, though, leading up to today, because we wanted to really have a deep conversation with this group about how we recruit. How do we all recruit volunteers? Do volunteers just show up? Do they come to us? Do we have to do active recruiting? Is it done through social media? Is it done through word of mouth? So the three key areas I'd love for us to cover today are: how do you recruit volunteers? Are your volunteers these days, due to COVID, in person? Are they on Zoom? Are they doing things remotely? And we do want to talk a little bit about the volunteer applications. Thanks to those of you who've submitted them. As Lisa said, we're going to put them in the resource library, but we thought we would talk about, highlight some of the key areas on some of them. Having taken a look at them, I can tell you that there are things that I already want to pull into my volunteer applications. So yeah, I thought I would open it up and
Hold on.
talk about.
Hold on. Before
Yep,
we do that,
sorry.
is there anyone new? Can we just introduce whoever might be new here, just so we get a sense as to our new colleagues? And Lily, I know you're one of them, so.
Sure. I'm Lily. I'm the Director of Engagement at Shoki Jewish Family Service in Fairfield County. We're based in Stamford, Connecticut. And I have taken over volunteer coordination. I've been here for about a month, loving every minute of it. Happy to be here.
Welcome, Lily.
And
And I think you
Mildred.
said Mildred is new too. Mildred, can tell the group where you're working.
I'm working in Hamilton, Canada, Ontario, Canada, as a volunteer and program coordinator. I have here like a 5 month now, starting this position, so I like it.
Well, congratulations to Mildred and Lily on their new positions. Hopefully, you'll learn a lot from this group, and I'm sure, from your other experiences, you'll have things to share too.
I'm also new.
Yes.
My name is Megan Wyckoff. I work with Jewish Family and Career Services of Atlanta. I work with Dina. I'm the new Volunteer Services Coordinator, and I started on Monday, actually. So I'm happy to be here.
You get the prize, the newest.
Yes, three new people. That's fantastic. I mean, I think it goes to show how important volunteering is to the Jewish Family Service network, and why it's great to have professionals who take the lead in making this happen. So with that said, I would like to open it up with the question of, how do you recruit for new volunteers? What types of techniques have you used? What have you found that's successful? Elise.
Okay, hi. Well, it's coincidence because I forgot about this meeting until it popped up and said in 15 minutes. But this morning I sent out an email to my current volunteers to say I need to recruit more volunteers. And what I want to do is put an article in our weekly Constant Contact that says who becomes a shopper for supermarketing for seniors. And so I asked them, give me like three lines, just tell me about yourself and, you know, interesting facts, things people don't, you know, people might want to know. Are you working, retired, a student, whatever it is? And I got this response back that I wanted to share because this is, I mean, obviously this article hasn't been written yet, but this is what this woman just wrote to me this morning. She said, I'm retired and happened upon a table set up in front of my local market several years ago. It just spoke to me. It was a JFS table looking for new shoppers for their program. While I had done Meals on Wheels for many years, this was an opportunity to get to know an individual, learn their needs, shop for them, share a cup of coffee. It's been very fulfilling for me, and I know that I add value to someone else's life. So this was our grandparents' day when we were outside of different grocery stores in town looking for donations, but also to spread awareness of the program. And it just clicked for her. So
actually being out there, being on
it made a difference. Yeah. So people could see, they saw the mission, and she's not the only person. I think we got quite a few volunteers through that program, but it was just, so it was like being in front of people's faces, and we've gotten it. Our town agency on aging, commission on aging has a health and wellness fair, or they did up until the pandemic. And so we'd have a table at the Health and Wellness Fair and people would sign up.
Thank you.
And that's an event for seniors and people would sign up at that event as well. So having a table,
like pre-pandemic, having a table out at different health fairs and stores and other community places is a great way to have that visibility.
Yeah.
I think I saw Dina's hand first and then Lynn.
Yeah, so we've been so fortunate. We really don't have to recruit that much. We have volunteers come to us. But when we do need to recruit, like for a specific, if a program comes to me and says, hey, I need five more volunteers, I usually will send out an email to our database. So we have almost 1,000 people in our database. And if they can't do it, sometimes they forward it to a friend and word gets out there. For our young professionals, like for our PAL program, which is our Jewish Big Brother Big Sister program, when we dance. So we have a mitzvah day coming up, or we've in the past, pre-COVID, this is our first one post-COVID, we've had 200 young professionals doing a day of service in different venues across the city of Atlanta, and we recruit there for our PAL program, or when we do an event like Havana Gala, it's a Saturday night fundraiser for young professionals, we'll also try and recruit for our big pals, for our mentors. So we do that, but for our regular programs, again, don't have to do too much, but there is, I don't know if anybody else has this Facebook group in their area, but we have Jewish Moms of Atlanta, which is, and Jewish Women of Atlanta. So sometimes we'll post on there if we have a need, and then we get a lot of response from that. So that's been a really great recruiting effort too, when we have something specific we need to ask for.
That's a very interesting use of social media to be able, and I saw a lot of heads nodding too when they have Facebook groups that work for their communities. Thank you, Dina. Lynn, I think I saw your hand up next.
Yeah, I was just gonna add, because we can't go in person to fairs now, you know, or like to shopping malls and things like that. I found that some of the, especially for the younger generation, if I could say it that way, the universities and whatnot, all their fairs are online now. So we're just designated a time slot and it's working really well. You know, the students come in if they're interested and they're good. They usually do their homework beforehand, so they know a little bit about us, but then we have the opportunity to meet them for about 20 minutes, a half an hour, and it works.
Do other communities have online fairs like that? It sounds so interesting to me, Lynn, and it's not something that we have here, so I'm just curious if others do. I like that.
Okay. Model. Oh, so then I can elaborate. Like, so usually we would have gone, let's say, down to McGill University, and they take one of their big salons, and they have all the different organizations set up booths. It's a typical fair, right? So instead, what they're doing now is online. So they slot the coming center in from 1 to 1:30. And all the students who are interested join us at that time. And we have the opportunity to explain what we're about and what the opportunities are. And, you know, if they wanted Jewish Family Services, they'll go from 1:30 to 2. You know, so they can go to as many as they want.
You know, it's interesting you say that. The only reason I'm bringing that up is because my daughter went to Rutgers University and they did that online. And it, you know, with a lot of different volunteer organizations, and you write what it is that you are offering, and, you know, people went. That is a really good way to recruit volunteers.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to start looking for that in our community too. Vanessa, I think I saw, yep, I see your hand raised there.
Yes, we find the best way is word of mouth. So starting really basic with having volunteer roles that volunteers are really interested in. And then current volunteers reaching out to their friends. We've also had a lot of success with press releases, specifically press releases with a photo of a volunteer. Those seem to get the most responses.
When you say a photo of a volunteer, do you mean somebody who's sort of talking about what volunteering they've done?
No, like if someone is volunteering in the pantry, it'll be a picture of them maybe holding a pantry bag or stocking things.
Press releases. Do others use, I'll raise my hand on this one. Do you guys use press releases? Yeah, that looks like a popular one too.
Who picks
Thank
up
you,
those
Vanessa.
Press releases? Who picks them up? The Jewish papers, the daily local papers?
Local papers, anybody, yeah. We'll have a lot of success with our local paper picking it up.
We were actually on the news last week for a project that we were doing, so it got a lot of attention on our local news. So yeah, Vanessa, I'm with you. I think the press releases are a good model.
I think somebody's got to make friends with whoever is the editor or whoever does the writing, because otherwise, you know, it just goes into an abyss somehow. So that's
or if you have it.
We used to not have photos with them. That's when we started noticing that they would have more traction with newspapers when we had that photo.
Mm-hmm. If your JFS or, you know, if your organization, your agency has a good communications department too, sometimes, you know, they'll stay after those people. They'll stay after the people on the news front.
It's not about recruiting volunteers so much as it's just about the impact that we're having on the community with like our food pantry or some other service. And then volunteers reach out to us. How can I help?
Mm-hmm. Melanie, I think I saw your hand next too.
Thanks. We use a lot of the same things that people are talking about. You know, word of mouth from people who are already volunteers, and a monthly newsletter that we send out through email, et cetera, et cetera. One thing that maybe this group can help me with is I want to try to diversify our volunteer pool and not just really focus on the Jewish community and focus on just the greater community. I know that we don't probably do as many press releases, and maybe that's a good way to get the word out to the greater community. I like that idea. We do Facebook posts through the agency, but I would like to diversify the pool of volunteers, and maybe people have ideas about that.
I see the person from Baltimore raising her hand, but I'm not sure I know your name.
It's Rosie. I should have changed my name. I'll rename myself when I remute. There's also Volunteer Connect, Volunteer Match, and Points of Light. You can go on all of those websites and register all of the volunteer opportunities that your agency or program offer. But be prepared that there should be a real need, because otherwise you will get responses. And if they are localized, if you're only accepting volunteers in your immediate area, it's important to add that.
Can you say what those were again? Volunteer
match. Yeah, volunteer match. And you can just Google them. Volunteer match, volunteer connect, and points of light.
Has anyone used those organizations?
Yes, we get referrals from all of them.
Mostly
volunteer match and volunteer connect. But our programs, even the virtual ones, we restrict to Maryland residents. Because we're hoping, obviously, to transition from virtual back to our in-person. But all of our volunteer opportunities currently are for clients. We are expanding them to the community, at least during the pandemic, because there's such a great need because of isolation and loneliness. But I highly recommend them, especially Volunteer Match and Volunteer Connect.
Those sound like good recommendations for diversifying. So Melanie,
yes,
thanks for raising that. That was a good question to ask.
Well, good. Well, we don't discriminate, as I'm sure you all don't, but we'll accept anyone. But there are age restrictions for most of our programming. So you have to be as particular as possible in giving them the details of what the qualifications are, and also what your process is, because we criminal background check all of our volunteers, regardless of the level of their participation. So it's more helpful not to be fielding all these emails, hopefully all these emails, if you are discriminating in what you're asking for.
I'm not sure I understand. What does that mean, if you're discriminating in what you're asking?
I mean, if you're only accepting volunteers 21 and over, 18 and over, if you're looking for people to do a specific thing once a week, the number of hours they're willing to contribute. Most of our volunteer programs, because they formerly involve client contact, we would ask for hopefully a one-year commitment, because they were relationship-based, shopping, visiting, driving. So we don't want to go through the volunteer process of paying for criminal background checks and also DMV checks if they're going to volunteer for a week or two.
Right.
It's not cost effective. I think that's pretty important to all of us.
I did look at your application. You had just sent it in. And, you know, I know a lot of different programs from JCS. And I had said that to Belinda. It looked very comprehensive with all of those questions in it. And it was fillable, you know, all check, check, and check. So that was an interesting one. But I'm sure maybe others are like that too. Yours just happened to be the only one I saw because it just came in.
Good application. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I want to make sure we get to Tracy because I know her hand is raised.
And Marla's was too, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then Vanessa.
It's good to see everybody. So we are actually starting to do more in-person events and activities. So because of that, we are able to have either a table, a representative from our agency, include volunteer opportunities and information at the table or at senior events where we have a minute or two to talk about specifically JFS agency. I work really closely with our director, who puts a weekly Shabbat email out, and she'll do a shout out for a need of volunteers if I need it. So I think working holistically and collaboratively with other people in my agency and with Federation, because we're part of the Federation umbrella. And then I also schedule quarterly open house events right now, which are still virtual, but it's about 30 minutes. And I call it an open house, but it is, you have to be there on time. You have to be there like 10:30 or 11. And it is really just an informative event. So for people who don't really know if they want to commit or have any idea about what we offer. It gives them an opportunity to just learn a little bit more. And those have been really successful. I have about, well, my last one, I had 100% return on it. I only had like 5 volunteers join us, but all 5 did become active. They've been active for the last 2 months, volunteers. So it's been very successful and worth a good ROI on that. And then we also do post things on our Facebook page. And as was mentioned before, like we have a Jewish moms group, we have a Raleigh Jewish club on Facebook. So a lot of word of mouth comes through that. I have a lot of social media frenzied current volunteers, especially moms who will be like, hey, can I post this in the moms group? And for example, 2 days ago, I found an Israeli, a Hebrew speaking Israeli volunteer to start calling a client who only speaks Hebrew on a regular basis. So that's been a really good way for us to connect. But I appreciate the question on how to diversify. We are a fairly small community here in Raleigh, but we're growing. So the needs are being met, but with us growing, you know, it'd be good to know how else to do that with like Volunteer Connect. So thank you.
That's great. Thank you, Tracy. I'm like making notes of what everybody's doing. And I really like the virtual open house model. We had done something like that on a certain scale, but I like that you're really bringing in people, bringing in new people that way. I'm going to follow up with you on that. I saw Marla and Vanessa. Is it okay, Vanessa, if I call on Marla since we haven't heard from her yet? Tell us what's happening in Chicago.
Hi, we're going back to full masks indoors on Friday, so let's enjoy these couple days. I wanted to add to the list that Rozzy offered and that we have advertised on the ARP website. And your offerings just need to be approved, but we didn't have any problems, so I wanted you to know there was another like free source, and we do get returns on our volunteer match from posting on volunteer match.
Can you put that into the chat? Whatever that is, ARK, A-R-K?
ARP.
Oh, A-A-R-P.
Oh, A-A-R-P.
Oh, no one.
It must be that Chicago accent.
Oh, A-A-R-P website.
Yes.
That's probably a good idea.
Also, if we come, I'm just kind of, before I go a step backwards, if we have specific opportunities that arise, we do e-blast with our volunteers, current and inactive, which means that we haven't really seen them for a year and we're a little generous with the whole COVID timeframe. But we put that in our e-blast, which comes out twice a month. And then when somebody talked about the fairs, like not just health fairs, what I think has helped us tremendously in virtual opportunities has been partnering with like sort of people you never expect to. So the first thing we did was partner with a nursing school who all their medical opportunities were closed at the time of COVID. And we were able to give them friendly calling clients who receive our home delivered meals, which is part of Meals on Wheels. And we tried to emphasize that we were helping them with their soft skills versus really, so they gave us like 3 weeks. They each called probably 9 people and we got a great bang for that buck. And that was a nursing school. So that would never be something necessarily that we would think of. Also, we've been partnering, like I did a cold email to DePaul because I was participating in an online leadership course they were offering and just said, don't know if you ever haven't, you know, do you have a place to post for volunteers? And this was DePaul and it somehow got to the law school and they are actually require their first year law students to do service. So we have to, it's sort of like, you almost have to think, for me, it was like backward, like who might do community service or need community service? And then we hooked into, again, because they didn't have medical facilities. Loyola is a school nearby and they have a master's of arts in medical science. So it's a program that helps graduates of undergrad. they do this, and then they apply to medical school. And so we partnered with our internal departments to they have needs. So our research department, our community engagement department, who runs STEM Talks virtually. So we were able to have great success with that. And we're actually getting ready to present next week back to them for this year. All virtual. Then the last thing was that we connected with a undergrad student at Loyola, who was her first year in social work school. And they, again, so it's schools who like push for the community service. So they may not be Jewish, but you could get a lot of return on that. I think that we don't always think about, but because we've had these other opportunities that made us kind of look in a different way. So we went to, and then they're doing things to improve their, it was an experiential learning program. So they changed the name, but it's undergrad. And then they have like three ways. You can do community service hours. It's like 20 to 30 hours. You can do a full on internship. So it's nice to kind of partner with places that, again, normally you don't think of. And then we just had a call back from, we have a music school that would do performances for our seniors, and they just got a grant and want to do more service. So we're trying to be creative on how we structure what that could look like. And it's kind of fun.
I like that with the partnering with the schools. Lisa, were you saying something?
Yes, but I know someone else wanted to talk first. So Vanessa, I think, was going to speak.
Yes, I know, Vanessa, you had your hand up.
I did. It was just a follow-up to Roz about the volunteer match and connect, because I've had a lot of people express interest and then not respond to the email when they've emailed me. And I don't know if that's something that other people have had that issue and how they may have fixed it or what works to help maybe decrease that.
Well, I always respond within 24 hours and I outline exactly what our expectations are, but briefly, and we consider those inquiries, even if they're local, well-intentioned, because that's the way you have to look at it. There's a lot of shopping. And from our perspective, because our programs are specific and not typically one and done, if we have an event that is several hours, we have better success with young adults or the colleges or Hillels or groups like that. But whatever your experience is, mine has been with young adult volunteers, and even historically, it's been true. They are very committed to a one-time experience, but even if it's okay. Once a year, they will commit to that, and they do their schedule and calendar way ahead of time, especially if they're part of the Greek system. So you have to consider their availability and also what they're signed into. You know, it's a tactile experience. So if it's something they can't relate to, then it won't work. We've also had very good experience if you have a Repair the World.
That's what I was going to say. Repair the World just got $7 million, you guys, from Melinda Gates. And their Serve the Moment. Is that what you're talking about? The Serve
yes,
the Moment
yes.
cohort?
Yes, we've had, they've been extremely, extremely participatory and bring a lot of resources, which they also have, as you said, financial resources, but also physical resources because of the internal events that they have for people to participate and to encourage young adults to volunteer. And it's like grassroots in communities, and they've been incredible. They work with us every year on our forum party, and we added a carnival to it for our clients and adults with disabilities, and they've been great. So if you have a local chapter branch of that, I highly recommend reaching out to them.
And the reason they're so good besides that is that you don't have to do the vetting, right? Repair the World has done all the vetting, all the money, and it's free, and they They do. Their job is to try to raise awareness about the organization that they're paired with. So they can really bring new volunteers to you, not just teenagers or, you know, young adults, but, you know, older people in the community. And it's very diverse. It can be, you know, the cohorts are diverse. They're not all, you know, just.
I think, Dina, you were saying that you've worked with them also?
With Repair the World, yeah, we've done Serve the MoMA volunteers, but they've also been great partners for us for other things, for food delivery. We had a whole project where we adopted some families during COVID from a Southeast Atlanta food pantry, and they helped us connect with volunteers, but they did not do background checks and such. So we had to.
Oh, they didn't? I thought they background checked all their volunteers.
Our local chapter did not background check all their volunteers. So they were partnering with us with some other organizations that did. No, because I know their person reached out to me and what vendor we used and what could we pay for all the background checks and that. They are wonderful supportive partners of us, but maybe in different areas, they have different protocols.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we also, I mentioned too, like we have some companies, local companies that provide opportunities for their employees to volunteer like 3 hours a month or 4 hours a month, whatever it is. And so we partner with them and we have their employees come and work in our food pantry or some of the other things that happen during the week that they wouldn't ordinarily be able to do if they were working full time. So that's been good too. So we've gotten a few volunteers that way as well through local organizations that pay their people to take, you know, volunteer hours during the month to support the community.
It is interesting though, hearing about how, you know, how creative everybody is in partnering with other organizations and other agencies. Like when Marla and others were talking about with the universities, with the colleges, and you know how that can really bring in a maybe a more diverse group of volunteers than we might have otherwise.
We have through Emory University, we have first year med students who they want to have a community experience to help with their soft skills. So every year we get a few Emory med students, first year med students. So we have two starting this month with us. So they volunteer as well. And it is a more diverse group when we get those students in.
Very good to tap into that.
Like a little benefit could be like we had one of the nursing students, actually two, convert over to continue the program when their semester, when their 3 weeks was done. So one's still with us. And we actually, we were in a project in the middle of a recognition project where we're kind of starlighting our volunteers and asking some good questions. And this young woman was interviewed and to hear her speak about, you know, I didn't really know much about Judaism and it's not a lot of different than the church, you know, you're like, yes. So it's nice to make the bridge when you can.
We've also had colleges participate when they're having a dance or an event. If they're not actually going to volunteer, they can, as part of their admission to an event, they'll bring a school supply or a toy for our toy or school supply drive. So, I mean, that can also apply to food pantry items if your agency operates a food pantry, because that's a good way for people to be involved. And it's sort of an inroad into your agency and what you do. And so we have gotten follow-ups from things like that.
I'm with you there. That's very much what I'm always thinking about is our entryway through the food pantry. Dana, I know you've had your hand raised. So how about Dana and then Elise?
Awesome. Thank you so much. So I wanted to respond to Vanessa's question about Volunteer Match and online inquiries. I have at JFCS Minneapolis had a similar experience where I think it's, you know, I want to continue doing it because I think it's great exposure for JFCS to be listed on those sites and have our information. I have found it doesn't result in a high success rate. I often, you know, I'll email people right back and rarely hear. And so I imagine maybe similar to a job opportunities, maybe people are reaching out to multiple places and whoever, you know, whoever they're most interested in, which is too bad. You know, you'd expect if you send a nice email that someone would acknowledge it. But yes, I too have found that. And then as far as when it comes to recruitment, I think, you know, I can definitely relate to what a lot of you have said about different ways and also getting a lot of ideas that I'm jotting down as well. I am just reflecting on something that I found has worked well. I use a combination of constant contact emails, but also personalized recruitment emails. And I've actually lately, I found that those personalized emails that are just coming from my inbox, not constant contact, I find a better success rate. And I don't know if that's just a sign of the times or what, but I really try to personalize them and, you know, send that generic thing saying, you know, I was thinking about you for this opportunity, and just, you know, add that nice JFCS touch. And I hear, and people respond to me when they can't help too, which I think is just so sweet. And it keeps that connection going. And you know, you're able to maintain that relationship with someone, but just want to add that in. While I agree that there's so many reasons to continue to try to diversify and add to our volunteer database, it's those people who maybe volunteered a couple of months ago that I have in my mind that I can pick and reach out to them. So
you're right. I think those databases are so good, and that's our skill set as volunteer professionals, is to know which volunteers we want to follow up with personally. Elise, I think you were raising your hand before. Yes.
Oh yes, I was just going to say that we've also partnered with churches and synagogues. You know, ask them to put in their newsletter. We've gotten some great volunteers that way from both. Particularly during the pandemic, when everything was locked down, we got a lot of people. And also through one of the private schools in town that has a whole department now that's for community engagement to get the students involved. And that's been successful.
Sounds like those are great resources too, schools, churches, synagogues. Dina, I saw you have your hand up.
There's two more groups, and again, I don't know if you all have these locally, but the Young Men's Service League, which is high school sons and moms, and National Charity League, which is mothers and high school daughters. And they always have someone who's the head of their community engagement, and we've partnered with those groups. Like all summer, we had the Young Men's Service League, where moms and sons would come and work in the food pantry. And then during the year, I know sometimes the moms like to continue doing some volunteer work. And again, that brings diversity because those are not necessarily Jewish groups, but they're groups that are in the community. So those are two, National Charity League and Young Men's Service League.
Since we're still talking a little bit about other organizations that we partner with or get references, referrals from, I think I heard somebody mention your local federation. My counterpart at our local federation, she and I really share volunteers back and forth. If I have somebody who's not really kind of qualified to do JFS volunteering, I'll send them to her. She sent me a lot of people. Do you have relationships with your federations in that way? Joyce? Yes? Marla?
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Joyce. Go for it.
Yeah. I was going to say that's a great resource for us, especially when they have their newsletters. I'll kind of send something to them to say, here's some opportunities we're looking for volunteers for, and they're really great. It might not happen right away, but often it'll say like in our next newsletter, and then a couple weeks later. So it's one, a nice way to partner with another agency, but two, it's just another way to put it out there. And they tend to, we don't necessarily have a high success rate, but they tend to be like the volunteers who really stick and who are serious, which is really nice. And then to jump on what we were talking about earlier, something for all the ways people have talked about getting volunteers, we do the same, social media, things of that nature. But something that's been really helpful with us recently has been, we're fortunate where a lot of our board members are also volunteers. So often we mention the need and they'll be really great about getting referrals, and they're usually then really reliable, will turn up. So that's always been really nice. And then especially asking our current volunteers, especially when we've had needs like Russian speaking volunteers or Farsi speaking volunteers, reaching out to those volunteers and saying, could you share this with your friends and family? Because people often will say, oh, we had someone who's like, oh, my daughter is actually looking to volunteer now. She got laid off. And that has been such a help for like when we've had specific populations that we're trying to reach out to. Our current volunteers have been really great about spreading the word, and it's been really successful for us recently.
That's great.
Very good to hear. I'm just kind of keeping an eye on the time. So I wanted to ask if there were, I want to move on to something else, but I wanted to see if there were any other last recruitment techniques, skills, things that you found successful.
Dana just put something in the chat.
Oh.
Which I think.
Has anyone found a good way to engage former clients as volunteers? They seem like great ambassadors for the work we do. Interesting. Yes. Former clients as volunteers. Anyone?
It's a
trick. And Mel, go ahead, Melanie.
Sorry, I felt like I butted in line. I was just saying, for me, it's been a little tricky with the former clients. There's a real sensitivity here in Houston, so I always have to check with case managers or whatever if this former client would be appropriate for a volunteer position. So I've run into a little bit of problems with that.
It's so important that we connect with our colleagues about that before we have clients as volunteers. Lynn, I saw Lynn's hand and then Tracy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a little different because we're a comprehensive center. So, I mean, it's not so much now because we're not in person yet. But when a client comes in and they're involved in the mental health program, let's say, what we try to do is integrate them throughout the center. So part of that integration is actually having them volunteer.
Wow.
It's been wonderful addition to our team. How can I say this? You know, our regular stream of volunteers have no idea if anyone is a client. It's all confidential. So it's just part and parcel of people participating as members in the center, taking activities, volunteering, whatever they choose to do, and no one has any idea who's who. So it works well.
Tracy.
So I want to echo what Lynn just said. We do integrate a lot of our clients to help with food pantry, even deliveries. And again, we do keep it confidential, but there is also what was mentioned before is constant communication with their caseworker or social worker, specifically regarding boundaries. That issue has come up. As far as how communicative the client can be with other clients and what to say, what not to say. So it's presented a couple of challenges, but it's doable. We have a summer camp at our Jewish Community Center, and a lot of the families who receive scholarship, it's not required, but it is mentioned when they receive a scholarship to see if they and their family would like to volunteer. And I've gotten some really good families that like lead Shabbat services at a local senior living community or do food pantry deliveries. So that's also a good way that we've been able to integrate our clients.
And Vanessa, yes. Sounds like Vanessa has experience with this too.
I do. And we go about it the same way with any volunteer. If they're interested, they go through the application process. And I actually have a question for Lynn and Tracy of, we've had people interested who are either former or current clients and not passing the background check. And does that happen, or is there something like a different process for them, or you could provide any?
I don't know what to say because I haven't come across that as yet. So
oh,
I don't know
okay.
what to say, although, you know, I don't know what happens in the States. It might be a little different in the background checks. I would work with a case manager perhaps and make a decision. I don't know.
I don't think that if they don't pass the background checks, then I don't think you can have them because they're your liability. And
yeah.
You want to believe in them. If anything goes wrong, you know, you're sued and the agency's, you know, done for. So I would say, don't do it. That would be my, that's what I would say if I was in the role of a CEO and that happened.
I think Tracy was.
Yeah, sorry. That actually did come up with one of our clients then volunteers, and it turned out to be very circumstantial. So it was we're approaching it as like a case by case. Obviously there are off limit issues right? Like sexual offenses, you know, felony, theft, things like that. But in this particular case, it was something very, it would not affect any confidentiality, or it didn't raise any red flags for us. So along with the lines of wanting to offer an opportunity for a client to give back, because we are a sliding scale agency, we don't accept any insurances. So a lot of our clients don't pay anything, just like our scholarship families. We do want to encourage them, if they can, to at least donate their time to help with things that we need. So it has happened, but it is circumstantial. So,
and it hasn't happened often with us, but it's good to see that it's, you know, what your process is like when that does. Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw what Dana was saying, but that their current policy, if a client is a current recipient of their program, then they can't volunteer in that program in the same year. Hmm. So I imagine that's also sort of part of like that screening and understanding about that, the relationships with the volunteers and clients. Elise, yes, sorry.
I have made, when we use Volunteer Match, I was very specific on the listing. And in other places as well, that if you're interested, and my emails, when people email to say they're interested in taking part, I'm very specific that you have to be able to pass a background check. And that is sort of becomes a self-selecting, it's right up there. It's not about they've gone through the process of applying and then they get turned down. It keeps people from applying who might have other, I've only come across one person who was working for us, and when she saw that, she said, I better wait a year, because there was something, you know, I don't know if it was DUI, but she said something was going to drop off her record, and, you know, so she said she would hold off. But it's a way that people realize, I'm not going to pass, I can't do this, and you don't have to turn them down, they've made that decision.
I feel like that is part of the recruitment process overall, is letting our potential new volunteers, letting them know what our screening process is. And some of them, like you said, do self-select and say, I had that experience twice this week, actually, where they said, oh, I think that's not gonna work. But being clear and upfront, because, you know, we'd love to embrace all of our wonderful volunteers or the potential of these new people to our agencies. But part of our job, as we all know, is that sometimes those matches don't always happen. So I know we're at, well, 2:20 East Coast time. Do we want to take a minute or two to talk about some of our volunteer applications? I wanted to sort of give that as an option to the group, because again, we do want to put these in the resource library. I was going to share the screen on some of them, but what I'd really like to know is, do you give out your volunteer application before somebody ever becomes a volunteer, or do you do like a little bit of a screening, or maybe an interview or some sort of intake before you give them a full application?
You mean, is it a two-part or is it just one full?
Yes.
One?
Right. Okay. Like here, let me share this screen, and maybe the owner of this one can tell us. I think this is Miami. I know I didn't, not Miami, pardon me, Minneapolis. Is this the Minneapolis application?
No, that's
not me.
That's Baltimore.
Oh, Baltimore. Sorry. Yes, I had changed on my screen. So is this an application that you have people fill out even before you meet with them? Or do you get to know them a little bit first and then say, oh, yes, we'd love for you to become a volunteer, fill out this application?
Well, it's interesting because our application process evolves constantly. We revisit it and redo it almost yearly, sometimes in the middle of the year. And the reason is because we at one time had posted on our website, this is actually a MAC form on our website. We also had a MAC form that was for an inquiry, and it became redundant, quite frankly. If someone's going to take the time to fill out an inquiry, typically they will go to the trouble to fill out an application. And because most of our programs are continuing, this isn't a form that's for a one-time thing. This is a form that is basically a commitment to one of our programs. So we have gone just to the one volunteer application. Typically, we'll get an email something first, and we also have, as part of the application, what programs are currently recruiting. Otherwise, it's just a waste of everyone's time.
That's helpful to know. I was scrolling up. I was trying to do it slowly so you can all take a sort of close look at it. And I know, having looked at a lot of the other applications, that they're sort of similar features, but some have very interesting, like, I don't have it on right now, but one of you submitted something where you actually gave the days of the week and you said people check off which days they're actually available.
Shoki, I think. But look at this. Keep on going down. So what kind of car, right? Are you planning to remain in Baltimore? Someone had mentioned that. What is your motivation? And, you know, people check it off. I mean, I thought it was very comprehensive.
Well, for our transportation program, many of our clients have some kind of mobility issue. We will not transport wheelchairs, but many of our volunteers either have low seated cars or high seated cars. Our clients need to be able to get in and out of. And we also need to know that there are mobile enough to get in and out of these cars. So right. we do try and give as much information as possible, but all of the questions aren't mandatory. If you see the ones with asterisks, we do need to know. But we respond to every application, and we also require an in-person or Zoom interview. We never just accept an application.
Right.
And as I said, we criminal background check everyone unless it's a one-time event in a group, but never one-on-one, because we consider all of our clients or participants, older adults, adults with disabilities, a vulnerable population.
Yes.
And everything we do goes through legal first.
Thank you for sharing that, Rozzy. I appreciate that. I'm looking again at the time, but I know Vanessa and Marla have their hands raised. So let's have Vanessa.
Mine was by accident. I didn't unraise it. Sorry.
Let's go to Marla.
I didn't lower it.
Hi, Marla.
So, hi. Thanks so much. I want to say, apparently we have a board member who thinks our application is too long. So I just figure you have to take out the two pages, that's all on HIPAA, just reading, no signatures. So I don't have a problem with it. I think we're thorough. I think there's some built-in deterrence, like an application that kind of weed who's going to really rise, right? For me, selfish girl that I am. And the other thing that we do often is we actually, I thought it might be helpful to share this, is we have a process piece. So that we've taken the steps of what's like, they can anticipate what's coming next. We'll verbally tell them, but this way we've already kind of said, this is what we have to go through for you to go through the process. We worked really hard on it. Of course, it's always under construction. So that's our huge application.
You guys see it? Does everyone see this that I shared?
Yes.
The CJ Senior Life.
Is that you?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the other piece to know is that our first two pages are loaded directly into our website page.
So you have availability too.
So I think what happens is it depends how people come in, right? Like, did somebody refer them? Everybody needs this filled out. We used to have a short episodic, which I hated that word, and then a regular app. And then we just decided we really want people to be more than episodic if possible. So we have this. So, but I think what else is helpful is to have a process piece of, so people know what the expectations are.
But this isn't on the website, the rest of it, just
the first two pages you can fill out on the website, and it actually loads into our database.
Well, I liked your whole training piece afterwards, you know, very clear. If anyone's interested in that, that looked good.
This has been such a robust conversation today. I wanted to just give like another minute or two if people had thoughts about recruiting, about volunteers, about anything that you thought was going to work for you.
Okay, excuse me. Did you see what Melanie said? Who does that? We make people study and take a HIPAA quiz.
Oh my.
That's amazing. I love that. So you basically study what Marla, you know, has in that form.
There's a baby quiz in there, but it's not a real quiz. The thing we had to do during COVID to have people in the building was they had to actually get trained on infectious disease, which was a 3-hour.
Wow. Well, I think that you all should look at all of the different forms in there because there were plenty. You know, we have now 2 more. So that's 11 that we have. And if anyone else wants to send them to me, then please do. You know, Lily, you had sent me your Galaxy dashboard, but I don't think we should put that in the resource file. Is anyone else using Galaxy? It's really, well, it would be interesting. You guys see what they've done. It's very interesting how that, and remember that's one of NJHSA's partner, what do you call it? Partners, I don't know, partners. I guess I should just say partners. We have a discount if anyone's interested in getting that. And we've had them come and talk twice to our volunteer services professionals. And I do think it's a great database, but I think it probably takes time to get it set up, right? Have you been working with it or is it brand new?
I've been working with it for the past month since I started. We just launched this morning. So it's been a very crazy day of working with our users, but it's already pretty successful.
Yeah, it seemed like it's pretty user-friendly. Anyway, you'll keep us posted because you get a good deal from NJHSA if your agency is ready to take the leap, as it were. So
I wanted to let this group know that we are planning to have a joint pop-up group with the Disabilities Professionals Affinity Group. I don't think we have a date scheduled for that, but it will be coming up soon. But we, you know, the chairs of both groups thought it would be a good opportunity since I'm sure a lot of our volunteers work with the clients with disabilities and the disabilities professionals can share with us, you know, what their needs might be. So we'll certainly
keep you posted. We're actually thinking of having someone from Chicago, JFCS Chicago, come and talk with us about their program that they started. And then other people could talk about other programs they have with volunteers and people with disabilities. And I think that's what that is, that they won some award, they got a huge grant. It just seems like something that would be interesting for agencies to think about that they could possibly do in their own communities. So we have to come up with a time, but it'll probably be in October because the holidays are coming up. And as we know, we each are going to be working 2 days a week, if that, for the next month. So it's crazy, right? It's going to be hard to get a lot of things done. But
I liked Marla's summary too. And thank you for saying that this was a good topic. I thought it was a great conversation, but especially like you said, we're dealing with attrition due to the pandemic and some volunteers who might not have been, who maybe aren't doing now what they might've done a year and a half or 2 years ago. Yeah. So let's keep the conversation going. We all know where to find each other and we're on Facebook too.
Okay. One last thing before we all leave. Tali, are you there? Can we see your face? Is your baby with you? There you are.
Sorry. I have a little bit of a headache and just took myself off the screen. I'm here.
Oh, good.
I've been taking it all in.
Okay, great. I'm so glad because you've been such a big part of our program here. So, and our affinity group. So I just wanted everyone to say hello, especially me. Yeah. Hi. Okay.
Thanks for all the good ideas.
Great. Okay, everyone. Celebrate. Shana Tova.
Shana Tova.
See you in October, if not.
Stay well, everyone.
Stay well. Yep. And safe.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks so much. Thank you, Belinda. Excellent.
Great conversation, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to them.